You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
You hear it, the happy music. I only bust this out for special occasions, and this is a special occasion, no question about it. One of the most special occasions I think of the entire season. What a night at Pepsi Center. Truly, I'm so excited for this episode of the show because this was one of the just most incredible games, regular season games, that I remember being a part of being in the arena for. The atmosphere, the highs, the highs again, the lows again, and then, of course, the ultimate high. Just such an incredible game. I did the recap. I don't write a lot of recaps on DenverStiffs.com, but I did the recap tonight and really enjoyed writing it, actually, because this was kind of a fun game to reflect on, not just about what happened, but sort of just what it all meant, what it all felt like, and just kind of reliving the experience of this night. So check it out on DenverStiffs.com. But one of the things I said was that this game was such a metaphor for the Nuggets season. You know, you think about it, this Nuggets season is defined by the injury to Paul Millsap. You know, he was the big free agent signing, and his injury came at the least opportune time, right in the middle of the season for more than half of the season, and just disrupted any ability to build momentum, you know, this year. So this game, you had an injury to a nasal fracture to Wilson Chandler. You had Gary Harris, obviously, still with his undisclosed knee injury that who knows when he's going to return on. I'm going to talk about that more towards the end of the show. So you have two injuries, and you're forced to play shorthanded. And then I think another part of the season is another way to define the season for the Nuggets is just these highs and lows. You know, the month of February, an incredible run. There's been games like the stretch where the Nuggets beat Portland and Golden State on the road on a back-to-back, you know, a high like that. Then you had lows where they lose to Sacramento and Atlanta and Phoenix almost all in a row. So it's just such an up-and-down season. And then you look at this game. First quarter, they're down. Second quarter, they're up. Third quarter, they're down again. Fourth quarter, they're down until the very end when all of a sudden they're up. I mean, it's just such a roller coaster game. And then most important of all, I think, with five games left in the season, the Nuggets have their backs against the wall. Everything looks bleak. Even after this win, things still look bleak. But there's proof that in sports, it's not over until it's over. And just like this game, it wasn't over till it's over. So that's what this episode of the show is going to be about. I'm going to recap my notes. At the end, I'm going to share a little bit about kind of going forward. And if you're new to the show and you've never listened before, I don't always just kind of go through the play-by-play. So if that's what you're looking for, go elsewhere. Go to DenverStiffs.com. You get a better idea of what happened. Rather, I want to share my notebook because there was just so many things that I thought were interesting about this game. So to get started, you know, the Nuggets went blow for blow in the first 5 minutes or so of the game, 11-11, I believe, maybe 14-14. I can't remember off the top of my head. But Milwaukee went on a run. And when Milwaukee went on that run, one of the things I think Malone has really gotten better at over the last four or five games or so is letting the team kind of work out the kinks and saving some of his timeouts. Now, he did end up using them in that third quarter, and rightfully so. That third quarter was such a disaster. But in the first quarter, I thought Milwaukee had a nice rhythm that they were starting to find, and Malone did a really good job, a couple transition points in a row, of just letting the team figure it out and trying to let them gain their own rhythm. I think, you know, I always describe this team as an offensive team, and I'm really going to talk about this later. You have to get an offensive rhythm. Offensive teams have to find their rhythm. If you're calling timeouts all, you know, every time a team gets back-to-back points against you, you know, it's hard for you to establish that rhythm. So I think Malone has done a much better job of that. And when Milwaukee went on a run, Malone just kind of allowed the team to get their footing, and I think it worked out. Millsap, another note in here. Millsap is really using his left hand a lot more. He still had a couple plays. That last play where he caught the inbound pass and then just fumbled it out of bounds might have been an injury-related thing. You know, I think it was such a bizarre play where he caught it and then didn't really actually catch it. I think, you know, that might be injury related, but there was one other time, I think, in the first quarter where he did something with his left that looked a little bit awkward. But other than that, I think he's going to his left a lot more. He just seems to be trusting it, even defensively with rebounding, all that stuff. He's talked about it after the game, how it's improved so much over the last couple weeks. So I think that's encouraging. I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing the best Millsap we've seen of the year over these last few games, because I think, for one, he's getting, you know, the chemistry is getting better. But two, I think his hand is just getting better, and we're starting to see a closer to full strength version of him. In the second quarter, the Nuggets storm back. So they get down kind of big, double digits in the first quarter. This was a game, you look at the box score of this game, and it's just absolutely absurd. First quarter, double-digit Milwaukee lead. Second quarter, the Nuggets outscore the Bucks by 21 points. Third quarter, the Bucks outscore the Nuggets by 22 points. So it was just absolutely absurd. Every single quarter was won by double digits or more by opposing teams, just alternating teams. It was really a heavyweight blow-for-blow type thing. In the second quarter, the Nuggets got their footing in large part thanks to what I think was a great adjustment by Michael Malone. You know, Milwaukee plays small. They have some big, strong, tall wings, long wings, but they're perimeter wings, and they can play kind of a stretch four, Jabari Parker, you know, one of them. Well, Malone put Plumlee out there early. He was pretty ineffective. And Malone made the decision, you know what, we're going to play small today. And that was it. That was it for Mason Plumlee. He went to the bench and he didn't come back in. He played just 2.5 minutes. Now, think about this. Mason Plumlee had a game-saving block shot in crunch time last game against Oklahoma City. Another impressive game, by the way. Unfortunately, on the weekend, so I didn't get to do a gamer recap show for that one. But great, great game, and Plumlee made maybe the play of the year up until that point by making that block. So he comes off of this high where he, you could argue he was the MVP of the game, to only playing 2.5 minutes, and just, you know, kudos to him for, one, being willing to do that and be that teammate. But it also just kind of speaks to the quality of talent on this roster, that even with so many people injured, you know, Malone saw a better matchup in Trey Lyles, and Trey Lyles went out there and performed. Wancho and Lyles as a combo, I thought, was really, really interesting. They were just so – Lyles, obviously big. He was attacking the basket in this game, and he was grabbing offensive rebounds. Wancho is such a great nose for offensive rebound. You put those two guys together, and I just thought the intensity level, the transition baskets, but also the offensive rebound opportunities just went through the roof, and it was fun to watch. Jokic ends up getting an extended rest in that second quarter, and – I think that was probably a good thing. He had, this was one of Jokic's best fourth quarters, and I think there was probably something to him playing fewer minutes in the first half than he's used to, and he was able to do that because of how well that bench unit played. I got to talk about Wancho Hernangómez, because he was one of the stories of this game. And his numbers don't necessarily pop off for the page for you. 6 points, one rebound, two assists, and he was a -6 in 21 minutes. 2 of 5 shooting, all of those three-pointers. I like the way Wancho plays, and it was great to see. I mean, he hasn't played a lot of minutes this year. We talk a lot about the loss of Millsap and how losing Millsap has been such a big part of the season, kind of defines the season in a lot of ways. We almost forget that we lost Wancho. And what I mean by that is that when he got mono to start the season, he basically missed everything at the start of the season. And by the time he was recovered, he was just out of the rotation. Malone didn't have time to kind of risk putting him in and figuring this out. And I think Wancho is a player. I like the way he plays so much. Offensively, I love the way he spaces and cuts the floor on offense. And get this, maybe even more so than Gary Harris. I think Gary Harris is a near ideal type of guard offensively next to Nikola Jokic, because he's a knockdown shooter, just incredibly great catch and shoot shooter, plays within himself, but he just cuts so well off ball. He moves so well off ball, and he reads Jokic so well. I think Wancho, in a different way, he's less of a DHO player, more of kind of a weak side guy. I think I might like the way he plays that weak side off of Jokic even better than Gary Harris. He has just such great timing on his cuts and where to be and how to space the floor, how to drag his defender. And then he's just so good at sneaking into tiny spaces to grab offensive rebounds and just kind of mix things up in there. I really like his game. Now, obviously, there's questions about him defensively. My colleague Matt Moore is actually really high on his defensive upside because of his length and his ability to use that length. I hope that he is right. I don't have a verdict on that take just yet because, we haven't seen enough of Wancho. And early on in the year when he was really looking bad defensively, you know, you chalk a lot of that up to the mono, and I think your fatigue level goes up when you're dealing with an illness like that. But if he can make himself into just an average defender, I think he really becomes almost like a free agent signing for the Nuggets next year because of how great of a shooter is. I feel when he's open, he's going to knock it down, and I feel like he's always going to space the floor so well. So him becoming a player would just be so big for Denver next season, but really for seasons to come. If you can surround Nikola Jokic with two defenders at all times and two elite shooters at all times, and sometimes those are the same guy, like Gary Harris can defend and shoot the ball, but if you surround him with two elite shooters at all time and two defenders, you're just going to be cooking for every minute that Jokic is on the court. You're going to be winning those 9 times out of 10 and quite often by a pretty sizable margin. Well, with Juancho Hernangómez, he adds another shooter that you can have. So even if he's not a starting caliber player next season, if you can just bring him in off of the bench, that means you can bring in one more defensive specialist. So for example, these Mason Plumlee lineups, if you end up having Mason Plumlee as your defensive four, but you're able to surround him with, say, like a Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, and Juancho Hernangómez, and then like maybe a Torrey Craig or something like that, you got your two defenders, you got your two elite shooters, and then Torrey Craig, who can shoot enough to add that third shooter. I just think that's like a bench lineup that is really, really, really good, and can I would feel very confident in that group not kind of regressing in those, you know, second quarters, start of fourth quarters, things like that. Another note in here, transition defense was really bad for Denver tonight, and that was one of the stories. They were outscored 23-7 in fast break points, and I'm surprised by that number. That number does not tell this whole story. Now, it's 3-1, more than 3-1, so it does tell a story, but I think Denver suffered even worse than what the numbers describe, because so many possessions they got behind the eight ball in transition and either were forced to commit a foul or they just bad matchups, and then you're able to, you know, a center switched out onto a shooting guard or whatever and you're just out of position. Now you got, you know, the paint opens up. So one of the stories of this game, I thought, especially in that third quarter when things started to snowball, was Denver's offense really fell off the rails. And their lack of offense just was leading to transition quick baskets. So a lot of times when Denver really starts to struggle, it's not so much that other teams are scoring. They always score on the Nuggets. It's how quickly they're scoring. And they got 38 points in that quarter. They outscored Denver 38-16 in the third quarter, in large part because they didn't have to work on the offensive end. They were getting runouts and transition shots. Jamal Murray picked up his fourth foul really early in that third quarter, and I actually think that was the biggest reason, like the unsung reason of why this game played out the way that it was. You don't have Gary Harris, who's a finisher. He's an elite-level finisher. He's a bit of a creator now. He's added that to his game, but his bread and butter is he's an elite-level finisher. You take out Wilson Chandler, who is, I think, a very good finisher and a very good, you know, you run a DHO between Jokic and Wilson, you feel good about that. It's not one of those ones where you're like, oh man, what's going to happen? Wilson's very good at, if the defense switches, he's really good at exploiting that. If he gets a smaller guy, he's good at exploiting that. But you don't worry about the DHO there. Well, when you take out Jamal Murray, you take out Gary Harris, you take out Wilson Chandler, that's three starters. And for majority of that third quarter, you were playing without either of those three guys. And I think part of what happened was Denver's offense got bogged down because you go to do a dribble handoff and it's Torrey Craig, who I like. I love Torrey Craig. I'm going to rave about him here in a moment. But he's not a guy you trust in a dribble handoff to put pressure on the defense and make a read and make a play. Same kind of goes for Devin Harris, who I think has a lot of skills. But if he's your primary DHO guy, then I think you're in trouble. He's good, I think, as your third option in the DHO, like Murray, you know, Barton, and then him, or Murray, Wilson, and then him. So So I think that as much as anything is what happened with the Nuggets offense. They just got completely out of their rhythm. The energy died. And I always talk about, you know, energy in basketball. Malone obviously always talks about, you know, the effort wasn't there. I always think these things are always tied to something. I don't ever think it's just, oh, the team walked out, you know, fell asleep at halftime and this is what happened. You know, when the offense bogged down, the team became very cerebral and was trying to think, okay, what do we do now? Nothing seems to be making sense. And as a result, the energy level dropped. Now, again, players have to be able to overcome that. And I thought in the fourth quarter, they did a good job of just kind of just kept punching. It was like, that fourth quarter was like your life is on the line. Like you're getting attacked by a bear and you're mauled and you're inches from death. And the only thing you can do is just start throwing punches like a maniac and hoping that you could scare them off. And that's what the Nuggets did. But in that third quarter, their energy level dropped. And I think it had to do more with them trying to figure out what they were supposed to do and figure out how they can make this offense work while missing so many key finishers. And then when they couldn't score, they were giving up the ball and then giving Milwaukee an opportunity to get runouts. And this is what Giannis does, by the way. He's an MVP candidate, and he's so good in the open floor. So you give him a running start, he's going to put pressure on you. I don't think it's a coincidence that Denver so handedly won the battle at the free throw line. Milwaukee made 23 free throws. Denver made 37. And I don't think that's a coincidence that on a game in which Mason Plumlee played just 2.5 minutes, Denver won an area that they usually are very, very good at and were very, very good at for most of the season minus the last month. And that is winning the free throw battle. And one thing about great defenses, and Denver is not a great defense, but one thing about most great defenses is they don't foul. They don't give teams easy opportunities to score, and especially at home, easy opportunities to rest. Well, Mason, I think, I've talked about this on the show, I think one of the things that he does that goes slightly, that hurts Denver in an underrated way is he's generated a lot of fouls. Well, in this game, he wasn't in. And so Denver wasn't putting them on the foul line a whole lot just for empty calorie points, you know, just those easy ones. Conversely, on the other end, you know, Plumlee's a guy that gets fouled a lot, but he's not a great free throw shooter. So a lot of possessions end up ending with him at the free throw line, and you're not necessarily shooting great there. So I don't think that's a coincidence. Again, not a huge knock on Mason, the player, but it is one way that he affects the game when he plays a lot of minutes. And you replace him with Trey Lyles, I think that was one edge that ended up going in Denver's favor. And free throws, by the way, one of the four factors. It's a really important part. I want to talk about Torrey Craig. How perfect is this dude? How many possessions does he save in an average game? In this one, not even an average game. He played a lot of minutes in this one, 36 minutes. Think about this, guys. He was in Australia last year. He was in Sioux Falls a couple months ago. He's a two-way player. And not even on a permanent contract, and he's out here making these just incredible defensive plays. He guarded Bledsoe for a lot tonight, and he, you know, a little bit Middleton. Middleton finishes 4 of 18, by the way, tonight. Torrey Craig just does all the dirty work, and then so many second chance opportunities, block shots, diving on the floor, just mixing things. He makes so many things happen. The Nuggets are so skilled. They need a street fighter, and Torrey Craig, that's what he is. He's a street fighter on the court where he's going to scrap and just so excited to see him. And then when he's knocking down his 3-point shot, and he didn't shoot well tonight. I think just 1 of 4. But when he knocks down that shot, he just becomes not just a good role player, but he becomes like an actual like super positive on both ends of the court. Jamal Murray. You know, I talked earlier about how the wheels came off for Denver when Murray went to the bench. Milwaukee had made a little bit of a run. They were down, I think, 11 or something at half, and they had cut it to like 6. But it wasn't until Murray came out that things really just completely collapsed. And it was that lack of rhythm because you didn't have the finisher or your kind of go-to pick-and-roll player. He made some great. It was I always talk about him making passes, the pocket passes in the pick and roll. He made some great ones in the pick and roll tonight, and he missed some really easy ones. It's so hard to figure him out because he had some. I mean, like wraparound passes, like tough angled passes, tight window passes. He was making some great ones, and it was a big reason of why Nikola Jokic went off for 35 points because he gets. You know, I think Jokic goes off for. You know, 10 to 15 tough points a game because that's what kind of player he is. He can make those tough shots. But when he scores 35 points, that's usually because he got 10 to 15 easy points. And I thought Jamal Murray did a good job of getting him some of those easy ones in this game. But he also just missed. Jamal Murray, I'm talking about, also missed a couple easy ones. So kind of a weird one. Such a confident player. He plays with such confidence for a guy his age. And I think eventually, right now, you know, not like an all-star caliber player or anywhere close to that, but I think his confidence, once his game actually matches his confidence, is just going to be so fun to watch. Tonight, you know, the Nuggets started making their comeback, and it was just, when I rewatched the game, I was still talking to myself thinking, how on earth does Denver win this one? 3 minutes to go and they're down 15. It just, nothing makes sense. But you know, Jamal Murray, it was such a big part of that. He knocked down some big-time three-pointers. He just made some big-time shots and ones. And then a moment I will just never remember, Easter Sunday of all days, a moment I will never forget. I'm sorry, not a moment I'll never remember, a moment I'll never forget. Standing at the line, all of Pepsi, some people actually started to leave Pepsi Center because, and I don't even, you know, I blame them because I think it's lame to leave. But, you know, when you're down 15 points with 4 minutes to go, you might start thinking about trying to beat traffic out of there. Well, a lot of people had started to leave, and the Nuggets rallied back so quickly that a lot of them like started walking back into the arena. Like they hadn't actually made it outside yet and probably heard on the speakers, oh, the Nuggets are rallying. Well, Jamal Murray, when he goes to the free throw line at the very end there, I mean, first of all, everybody's like jaws on the floor because they're like, oh, my God, the Nuggets have a shot to take this thing to overtime. The aisles were completely packed because people – like the there was a lot of people in the stands, but there were a lot of people in the aisles, and it was a cool moment because it was like nobody was trying to get out of the arena at that moment. Everybody was standing there watching this, and oh my gosh, the tension in the room, the excitement as he knocked down the first one, then the second one, then the third one. It was an amazing thing. This is what's so cool about sports. This is what I love about sports, these moments where everybody in the arena pulling for the same thing. And I literally had goosebumps. I showed the people sitting next to me. I had goosebumps on my hands because of how improbable of a moment this was. The Nuggets were a different team tonight when Jamal Murray was on the court, and he made some big plays in overtime as well. A great game for him. One of his better games, I think, of the season, really, all things considered. The foul trouble was tough, and going forward without Gary, I have a feeling Gary Harris can be out for you know the rest of the week probably. I mean, maybe he's back Thursday, maybe Saturday. I don't know. The team's being pretty quiet about whatever's going on with him, but it sure didn't seem like he would be back on Tuesday. But that's just me speculating. Jamal Murray can't get into foul trouble. He's always important. He becomes that much more important when you're missing Gary Harris. So when, as much as I thought he had a great game, he has to be a little bit more careful on something. He tried to block Giannis at the rim tonight, which you love that kind of effort, but it would have been much better had he just stayed on the court for the entire game. Millsap and Jokic, they've looked really good, I think, for several games now. It's kind of gone. The story has been about Denver losing and those third/fourth quarter collapses. That's been the story, but hidden behind all of that mess has been how well Millsap and Jokic are starting to play off of each other and assist to each other and just kind of know each other's spots. And both of them talked about it after this game about how comfortable they are with each other. Now, if the basketball gods will bless us with a full season of those two, it's going to be so fun to watch because they really are so unique and so dynamic. Going to wrap things up here with my final point, which is just that this game, you know, I remain very, very, very skeptical about this Nuggets team making the playoffs. Like, they really do need to run the table. Maybe they could lose one more if that loss, ironically enough, if they lose to Indiana, that's the game they can most afford to lose. Now, it's arguably the easiest game left on the schedule, but they can afford to lose that one and win the other four. that being said, it's much better that they just win out the rest of the games. And I still don't think that's very likely at all. That would be the Nuggets' best winning streak of the entire season against arguably the toughest stretch of opponents in their entire season. So counting on that, I think, is a little bit fantastical. But you know, there were nights like tonight. What was so cool about them was it was improbable that they would come back and win this game. This was a game that should not have happened, an outcome that should have not have happened. And so when you see something like that, that's what makes sports so great. It's moments like tonight where, and you don't get these too often. They're very, very rare. One out of every 100 games or so, you get a moment like this. And last year there were so many of these moments where Denver ended up on the other side. The home opener last year against Portland where Denver was up like 8 points with 12 seconds or something and lost. You know, you experienced those ones. But tonight was one of those ones where you've just got to cherish the moment of the Nuggets' odds of winning the game were so low at a certain point, and yet they somehow managed to claw back and never quit. And, you know, it just reminds you that Denver isn't dead yet. I'm a cynic. I'm a pessimist when it comes to Denver sports fans. I think I'm being a realist with the Nuggets and their odds of making it into the postseason, especially without Gary Harris and Wilson Chandler for another game or two or three or four, whatever it is. It's an uphill climb and it's improbable. It's likely still not going to happen. But nights like tonight remind you that it's not always just about the odds. Great, you know, surprising things happen all of the time, especially in sports, and you really just have to cherish them. So while I'm not backing down from my thoughts that Denver is probably cooked, I feel a little bit more confident that Denver can rally and win these games now than I did before this one. And that's what makes it so cool. That's what makes tonight so special. I think the fans all felt it that were there. They kind of felt this thing of, you know what, they might do this. It's at least possible. There's a little tiny light at that end of the tunnel. We'll see if they can keep it going and pull it off. That's what made tonight so fun. And that's what made this game, I thought, so important. Next up is Indiana, another worthy opponent and another game Denver absolutely has to have. Thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget about Stiff's Night Out. Everybody, I'm telling you. So it looks like, assuming Denver doesn't blow the next two, that game on Saturday against the Clippers is going to mean something. And I was worried it wasn't going to, and we were just going to show up for a funeral. And knock on wood, it looks like that game is going to be so fun, so exciting. Such a night to get together with as many Nuggets fans as you can. So Stiff's Night Out, don't forget about it. Saturday, 1:30, we're at the Celtic on Market Street, 1400 Market Street. Super Mascot Rocky will be there. Katie Winjay, the in-arena host, who's awesome, knows all kinds of stuff about the game, and she's just a really cool person to talk Nuggets to. Denver Nuggets dancers, we're going to have prize giveaways. We're going to have all kinds of cool stuff. And then most of all, we're going to be watching the Nuggets, hopefully, keeping their playoff hopes alive and beating the Los Angeles Clippers and kind of knocking the Clippers out of the playoffs. Everything's going to be on the line for that game. So put it in your calendar. Get your friends. Tell all of your friends about it, all your Denver sports fans, and let's have a good time. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. I'll be back again all week with brand new episodes.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.